You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
If you were asked to name the world's richest man and you answered Bill Gates or Warren Buffett, you'd be wrong. In the summer of 2007, a Mexican businessman named Carlos Slim Helú rose to the top spot as the world's richest man. His fortune is $59 billion and climbing. Brian Winter, the deputy world editor for USA Today, profiled Senor Slim for the latest issue of Foreign Policy magazine in an article called How Slim Got Huge. I'm pleased it has brought Mr. Winter to my show today. Hello.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm okay. Who is Carlos Slim? How did the son of a Maronite Christian immigrant wind up becoming the world's richest man?
You know, he's a really interesting, complex character. In some respects, he looks like central casting for a megalomaniacal businessman. He has this beard, and he likes to smoke cigars, and this double chin. He's a little bit overweight. In some respects, though, he's a bit austere. He's lived in the same house for three decades in Mexico City. It's probably nicer than your house and mine, but as far as billionaires go, it's fairly humble.
Is that a matter of image, or is he genuinely frugal?
Some people say he's genuinely frugal. For example, when he was in Washington earlier this summer, a lot of these Latin American tycoons tend to travel even when they're abroad in these black SUVs with tinted windows. And Mr. Slim actually rented himself a modest Ford sedan at Reagan National Airport here in Washington and drove himself around the city alone and dropped in some cases unannounced, on U.S. officials and business leaders here. So, is it contrived? Is it a show? Nobody really knows. He does tend to brag rather loudly that he has no homes outside Mexico, which is unusual.
And his name, Slim, comes from an Arabic name, Salim?
Yeah, his father was actually, his name was Youssef Salim, and he was a Lebanese businessman who moved to Mexico at the height of the Mexican Revolution and was a bit of an entrepreneur himself. He opened a general store in Mexico City called the Star of the Orient at the height of the Mexican Revolution. And Slim definitely credits his father with his business acumen. He made him keep ledgers of his acquisitions even when he was trading baseball cards on the streets of Mexico City and at school. And Slim still keeps the ledger on his bookcase in his office.
So he's one of these people who started with a small fortune and made it into a large fortune?
Yeah, he started working at a stock brokerage when he was still in his late teens and owned one by the time he was in his mid-20s. Where his wealth really took off, though, was after the privatization in the early 1990s of Telmex, the Mexican fixed-line telephone operator. And that was really the acquisition that took him from being merely rich to outlandishly wealthy.
And we'll get to that in just a moment. Did you know much about him before you started working on the story?
A little bit. I worked in Mexico as a correspondent for a year, so I worked for Reuters, and we actually had several correspondents who actually followed him pretty much full time. But when we did the profile on him for USA Today in May, we actually titled our story "The Richest Man You've Never Heard Of," assuming, I think correctly, that most of our readers had no idea who this guy was. He was number two in the Forbes rankings at that point, and then, as you said, he took over the top spot.
Although Forbes still lists him the 2007 Forbes still lists him as third, how do we determine who the world's richest man is?
A lot of it is based on stock prices, particularly in the case of Carlos Slim, just because he is, in many respects, he's a financier more in the mold of Warren Buffett than Bill Gates. And, for example, his cell phone company, America Mobile, which has interests in Mexico and around Latin America, its stock price has dropped rather dramatically since the middle of the summer. So that's taken its toll on his wealth. But you really have to check in day to day to see exactly where he stands.
How does his wealth compare to Mexico's GDP?
Yeah, there are some really pretty unbelievable figures here. His wealth is equivalent to 6.6% of Mexico's GDP. Now, to put that in perspective for you, Bill Gates is worth just 0.4% of U.S. GDP. And even if you go back to the era of the big robber barons, if you take the case of John D. Rockefeller at his peak in 1937, Rockefeller was worth still less than 2%. Slim's reach is pretty amazing and goes beyond this, his holdings in the telephone sector. He owns tobacco companies, construction companies. It's a frequent saying in Mexico is that you can't spend a day without putting a peso in Carlos Slim's pocket.
And he's not the only multi-billionaire in Mexico.
No, he's not. And actually, one of the problems with Mexico's economy and one of the things that economists says really keeps them from reaching more robust growth and therefore has at least in part motivated millions of people to seek their fortune in the U.S. is the fact that the economy, despite being modern in some respects, is really controlled more than even most emerging market countries by a very small group of people. Like there's a cement magnate named Carlos Zambrano. The media sector, the beer sector, I mean, you just look across the board, and really Mexico is a case study in oligopolies.
My guest is Brian Winter, who's written an article for Foreign Policy Magazine, the November-December 2007 issue, called How Slim Got Huge. We're talking about Carlos Slim, the richest man in the world. You mentioned that he bought the telecommunications company Telmex. That was the national telephone company. It was a nationalized company, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. It was publicly owned, and as part of the privatization drive that swept Mexico and a lot of other Latin American and, for that matter, Eastern European countries in the early 1990s, the government sold that off. The terms of the deal have been questioned ever since. Slim says that there was no wrongdoing involved. The sticking point or the complaint of many of his critics centers not so much on the purchase price than the fact that the Mexican government handed Telmex a six-year exclusivity deal at a time, if you'll recall, during the 1990s when telecoms companies were really expanding their reach around the world and willing to invest.
So, and isn't part of the problem that he was very close to then President Carlos Salinas? This may be as much a matter of political influence as it is of any real entrepreneurial expertise?
Yes, that is possible. And that's really the worrying trend that you see if you look at what Carlos Slim tells us. He's not alone. There are lots of businessmen in other places around the world right now, places like India, Russia, China, where on one hand, these are all economies that are doing well, and there's nothing wrong with making money. I mean, last time I checked, that was the point. But a lot of them seem to be making their fortunes, and we're talking about truly massive fortunes, based just as much or more on their political connections as much as their business acumen in sectors like management, innovation, and all the traditional pillars of a market economy.
And Slim had also been president of the Mexican Stock Exchange. He had friends beyond Carlos Salinas in high office, and he had the help of some other powerful telecom companies, Southwestern Bell and France Telecom. Did he buy the Telmex in partnership with them?
Yeah, his partners at the time were Southwestern Bell and France Telecom. They're no longer involved in the Telmex ownership structure.
He just bought them out?
Yes, I believe he did.
Now, what has the lack of competition had on Mexico's telecom industry? Weren't some other carriers like Skype attempting to enter the Mexican market?
Yeah, the classic case is in 2005, both Vonage and Skype, which are, of course, companies that allow voice conversations to be held over the Internet, accused Telmex of intentionally blocking access to their site so that people would have to use Telmex's services instead. Telmex said that wasn't true. But what's clear is that principally by charging very high interconnection charges, which allow or would allow other phone companies to use Telmex lines, they've done a pretty good job of keeping competition outside the Mexican market.
Well, they have to have help from the Mexican government, and now we've had a change from one party to the other, the party that Carlos Salinas was in, and I'm sure that Carlos Slim had very close ties with PRI. But Vicente Fox didn't change anything, did he? And the current president hasn't changed anything. So is he friends with everybody in power in Mexico?
Pretty much. I mean, President Calderon, who has been in office nearly a year now, has actually made you could say, more noises than his predecessors about encouraging competition and giving the regulators the teeth that they've never really had in the past to take on Slim's empire. But, you know, it's very tough. It's very difficult for these governments to take on a government like, or rather a person like Carlos Slim. I mean, what do you do when a guy has control over 7% of your economy? If he gets upset or you know, basically turns against you, he can throw your country into recession tomorrow, practically on a whim.
Well, Vladimir Putin has taken care of people like him, hasn't he?
Well, yes, he has, but, you know, Mexico's government, I would say for better or for worse, tends to be less dramatic in their measures.
Has Slim used any of his money for philanthropic purposes?
Yeah, he has. He's actually, he pledged in March that he was going to inject about $6 billion into his charitable foundations during the next 4 years. He's also given $100 million to the Clinton Global Initiative. Now, this falls well short of the $30 billion pledged each by the two guys who were up there with him near the top of the Forbes list, Bill Gates and Warren Buffett.
And he was a bit critical of them when they put all that money into their philanthropy.
Yeah, he did. He accused them of, not by name, I don't believe, but said that, you know, people who run around giving away their money are acting like Santa Claus, and that they should really be directing their money, if anything, towards infrastructure projects, health, education, things like that.
Now, you mentioned earlier similar situations in Mexico. There's the case of Lakshmi Mittal. Is he the Carlos Slim of India?
Oh, that I don't know. I wouldn't be able to answer that fairly. He certainly does have you know, a large chunk of wealth. And, you know, here's a guy who, just showing the reach that some of these new rich have, Mittal actually controls about 20% of steel production in North America. Now, that's stunning. I mean, nobody's heard of him, or at least I hadn't previously to researching this article.
And you say one-fifth of all steel production in the United States?
Or North America.
Oh, so Canada, the United States, and Mexico.
Yes.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
So does Carlos Slim also have a lot of money invested overseas, even though he doesn't have
a house
or an apartment?
Slim would actually seem to be the exception in this case. And as a matter of fact, his only real substantial foray into the United States was his ownership of CompUSA, the computer retailer. And that, unusually for Carlos Slim, that investment has not gone particularly well for him.
Do people in Mexico hold him in high regard?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. I would say probably not, but I would also say, to be fair, that a guy with that much money and that much influence could have a much worse influence in his home country than Carlos Slim does. Much better, yes, arguably he could, but he's friends with everybody, as you said, and so he's never really taken sides on major political issues. He, as a matter of fact, worked very closely with the former leftist mayor of Mexico City, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, who was a presidential candidate, was almost elected last year. He's shown himself willing to work with people of all stripes. And, you know, I think his charitable donations over the last year or so have improved his popularity somewhat.
Is there a role for an international regulatory body to influence the policies that of countries where the gaps between rich and poor are growing wider?
You mean like through the UN or?
Whatever. Right now it just seems that with so many people having a hard time just getting by in Mexico, Carlos Slim's fortune seems obscene.
I think it's more than likely that the solution to this problem is going to come via the Mexicans and the Mexican government. I mean, there is no magical solution to this, and short of a wholesale confiscation of wealth a la Hugo Chavez, you know, there really aren't that many tools available to them. You know, unless you start taking things away from him, or you do, I mean, the one possible example that would be valid with a guy like Slim would be that you could split his telephone company, Telmex, into lots of baby Telmexes like the AT&T breakup. I mean, that's a possibility.
Well, the United States broke up the oil monopoly, Standard Oil monopoly.
Well, that's right. That's right.
So they need a Teddy Roosevelt to take over the president. In fact, we may need a Teddy Roosevelt in this country to become president.
Well, maybe, but it's tough. I mean, let's go back again to the case of President Calderon. I mean, he is embroiled right now in this very difficult fight against the narco drug lords in Mexico, and has really rather bravely dedicated a whole lot of resources to that, with some apparent success. just given the decline in cocaine supply in a lot of U.S. cities to which the DEA credits the Mexican government's efforts. But is it possible to be fighting on that front and then, you know, take on not just a guy like Carlos Slim, but all these other billionaires who control so much of your economy? I mean, in these countries with weak rule of law and institutions, that might be too much to ask.
Brian Winter is deputy world editor for USA Today. His article, How Slim Got Huge, appears in the November-December issue of Foreign Policy magazine. It's also available online. And I want to thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.